Yo, welcome back into another episode of Cult Film Cafe Does Halloween. Yes, of course, it is me, Jonathan, one of your hosts, and as always, I'm joined by my partner in crime, Kenzie McLean.
Hello there.
So on this episode, we will be taking a look at the 1984 supernatural slasher film. You've guessed it, it's A Nightmare on Elm Street, directed by Wes Craven.
The kids of Elm Street don't know it yet, but something is coming to get them.
There's something out there, isn't there?
You can just see cuts happen.
What did that, Lieutenant?
I don't know.
Tina!
The coroner got to say.
He's in the jaw and puking since he saw it.
You're gonna kill me for sure.
Did you do it?
There was somebody else there.
He was locked in a room with a girl who went in alive and came out in a rubber bag.
No one knows where it came from or who it will visit next.
Nancy?
There's something wrong with you. You're imagining things.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Do you believe in the boogeyman?
No.
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
No!
No! She's the only one who can stop it. If she fails,
I'm your boyfriend now, Nancy.
No one will survive.
Help me, please!
From Wes Craven, director of The Hills Have Eyes and Last House on the Left, a new masterpiece in fantasy terror, Nightmare on Elm Street.
So, yeah, you've probably got a sense of where we were going to be going with this episode. If you've been keeping a track of the last few, we have been making our way bit by bit through what is considered to be the OG slashers. This was a Kenzie decision. He wanted to keep them to the end. So, yeah. Finally got round to Wes Craven's A Nightmare on Elm Street. And, yeah, this is a film I remember from my childhood. Specifically, the opening sequence where she's in, like, it looks like a school corridor or something like that. I'm pretty sure that in a later film, he comes swinging round the corner on a tricycle or something like that. Maybe I'm just making that up, though.
A tricycle?
I'm sure there's a way where Freddy... Because in this film, there isn't really much taking place in that part. But I'm sure in later films, there is things. I might just be waffling, but...
A tricycle just makes me think of Saw.
But there is five parts that were like the OG five films, you know? So there is a chance that I might be right, or I might just be making up. It might be a figment of my own imagination when I was a child. But no, nonetheless, yes, this is the film that features one of the most recognisable killers in the slasher genre. It is Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, Big Freddy. Probably a lot of people's favourite slasher killer. Depends. I think the big debate's usually between him and Jason Voorhees, I think, is who's the best. I feel like Michael Myers always gets left out a little bit, and I think that's a shame. But, yeah. They're the two kind of big ones that came, that I think people always used to debate about. And, of course, the film Freddy vs. Jason came out, of course. So that was like a kind of thing for both fans to be like, ah, who's better? So yeah, I like Freddy Krueger. He's kind of ish anyway. I've never been the biggest fan, like, compared to all the other slasher like villains and that. Never been that bothered about Freddy. I always preferred Jason, Michael. I always preferred them to Freddy, but Freddy's stands out a lot compared to the other two because, well, Freddy actually speaks. In fact, it is quite spoken, and it's a bit different for the slasher. That is, he's got a lot to say and says a lot of jokes and stuff like that, and I think it brought a kind of weird thing to the series. But in the first film, it was more horror orientated. I feel like the film that these films in the future go much more into comedy horror, especially in the later ones, compared to what it kind of started off as, to try and be a kind of horror-y film, and Freddy was meant to be taken seriously and kind of scary. Even still, it's still a bit goofy, but I don't know. I think maybe it's just the concept or just the character itself. But honestly, I think Wes Craven done a good job with this film. I do like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think, like we've said quite a lot on these older films, that retroactively looking at them, they can seem a bit silly now, but I can imagine watching this in 1984 when it came out that it was probably quite a scary film. I think it's because it preys on something that, I'm not saying everybody in the world has ever sort of had to deal with, but you know, the whole element of nightmare or struggling to sleep or insomnia, or do you know, when you can make something, when you can make something about a sort of issue that is widespread, it probably has a lot more of an effect on the general population because they can kind of understand what it's like, or what it might be like, or you know, what it could be to them. You know, obviously there is lots of people that suffer with nightmares out there. There's a lot of people that probably have really bad issues with sleep, and it makes them not want to sleep, and that all just plays into the part of the sort of one of the main draws to this film, I suppose, which probably made it quite a big success at the time, you know. Like Halloween, this is one of the most sort of raved about and critically acclaimed horror films, or I mean, I know that they're a slasher film, but you know, we'll just say horror film out there. I mean, this film still has a 95% fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which is fucking ridiculously high, considering the subject matter and how it could potentially have lost percentages over the years, but no, it still managed to maintain 95%, which, you know, that's stupidly high. There's not many films get into the sort of final 5% on Rotten Tomatoes, you know, that there won't be many films out there that have a 95 and above. You know, it's rarefied air, but this film is sitting quite comfortably in there.
Yeah, I don't really get that. Like, from the four slashers we've looked at, am I right that three of them, or no, I don't know about Texas Chainsaw, but two of them were in the 90s, right? Halloween and Nightmare.
Halloween's 96, this is 95. I think Texas is 88.
So it's still pretty high.
It's really close. And then obviously we had Friday the 13th, which was an absolute, like, I mean, it still wasn't terrible in terms of rating. It's just, it's nowhere near the highs of the other three. If you just look at Rotten Tomatoes score, or, you know, what critics are saying about it. It's a bit of a strange one. I don't really understand it, I suppose, as to why three of them were better, but, I mean, we have watched all three, in fact all four now, and yeah, I can see why Friday the 13th is definitely at least the least critically acclaimed, for me anyway. Like, I get that. I'm probably in line with the critics on this stuff. You know, I think you've got Halloween is definitely my favourite, closely followed by this one, then Texas, then Friday the 13th. So yeah, this is notorious for being Johnny Depp's film debut, and if you've seen this and know Johnny Depp now, you'll be like, how the fuck did a nice wee young boy in 1984 turn out to be the car crash that he is now in 2022? No idea. He's a completely different human being.
Almost unrecognisable.
Definitely,
point.
And even the character that he plays, you know, he's got so prim and proper with his haircut and his slacks, like his tan slacks and his shirt. It's just, it's weird to see him like that.
Doesn't even sound like him. It's quite peculiar. Yeah,
that is really peculiar. But yeah, and he he has probably one of the most recognisable death scenes in the sort of horror stroke slasher universe
history,
which is fucking mind-boggling to me how it works and the mechanics of it, the fountain of blood. But apparently it was inspired by Stanley Kubrick's scene in The Shining, you know, the bit where the elevator opens and all the blood rushes out.
Yeah
It kind of reminds me of that. It's fucking mental. What a death scene.
It's quite good. It's a good effect. It's crazy. Yeah, there's quite a lot to like about this film. It's quite creative in a lot of the deaths that are in it. There's not that many in this one. I think that's some. There's some, but like I think that is the future films do a lot more and they get even wackier. Like they get really crazy to the point where like some of them are just really weird. Like there was one where Freddy enters someone's dream, who's very good at controlling their dreams, so they actually have like a mad fight. It's insane. It's like all comic book styled and stuff like that, and he ends up getting like shredded like pieces of paper and stuff like that. So they take this film series in a weird way. Some people didn't like the way they took it. Some people did like the kind of comedic and creative kills, but this one it's more simple, but they're still quite creative. That part with Johnny Depp's death is how it's done. It's just weird. He gets pulled into the bed. It's a good effect. It's like I wonder if he got hit by the TV, because the TV also falls into the hole, and that could have hurt. I feel like I don't know how that effect.
That's quite comedic. I quite like the whole when he drags Depp and everything that he's connected to comes in with him. But in reality, would your headphones not just pull out the jack? It probably wouldn't pull a TV in with you. Maybe it would. I don't know. Don't know how it was interconnected, but no, the TV does come in. But I'm pretty sure he's got headphones on.
Yeah, and then suddenly just a big splatter of blood just comes flying out. It's crazy. It's a good. It's a good kill.
I mean, it's an OTT effect, but no, yeah. It's good. I do like it, which is sad to say because when we were watching this film, Kenzie pointed out at the end that I was about to see one of the worst effects ever in movie history, and it's really dreadful. And as the fact that you could do all the effects in this film up until that point so good, why ruin it with an effect so bad? Do you know what struck me is probably the best effect is when Freddy's kind of, it's like the wallpaper is like white silicon or, you know, neoprene or whatever the material, and he's pushing himself up to it, but he's not breaking out. And yeah, you see, and that's really cool. Don't know how they've done that. I've never really seen another film do that. So those effects I do like, especially only the ones that seem as though they're unique to that film.
There's only one other film I remember doing that effect, and that's Frighteners with Michael J. Fox.
What came out first?
This. Frighteners was in the 90s, I think.
See, because I was going to say that, it reminded me of Frighteners, because I think the Frighteners film poster's a bit like that.
Yeah, that's how the film kind of travels about for a lot of the film, is through the kind of like, you see him like going through the, like the walls and stuff like that. Maybe they got the idea of the effect from Nightmare on Elm Street. I don't know if they actually did, but maybe they did.
Maybe.
It's a kind of cool thing.
Well, yeah. it's just the way that there's nothing wrong with this, you know, like stealing effects, you know, specifically if they're good. And yeah, Frighteners, that was a big chunk. I didn't realise, 1996 Frighteners came out. Peter Jackson, didn't realise it was a Peter Jackson movie.
It was Peter Jackson?
Peter Jackson, wow. Yeah, he done some mad weird comedy horror stuff before he ventured into the world of Lord of the Rings, but yeah, it was a Peter Jackson movie, Frighteners. And yeah, I just know that film poster, and when I seen this, I was like, yeah, it's really close. But I was relatively convinced that this came first, and obviously it did. And there's some other cool stuff in this film, you know. I also wanted to point out that based on the last four films that we've watched, you know, all the four kind of OG slashers, or what we're saying is the OG sort of four slashers that kind of moulded that subgenre, this one is the only one that takes place over multiple days. Every other one that we've watched is pretty much started and finished in the same day, apart from occasional flashbacks. You know, Halloween's got one. Just now I think about it, Friday the 13th, it's like a carbon copy. They do a flashback and then they get to present day, and everything takes place in this that day. Texas doesn't have a flashback, everything takes place in that day. Well, the sunrise is coming up at the end of the film, but you get what I mean. Whereas in this one, don't know how long the time period spans, but we do know at some point that the main character, who is Nancy Thompson, played by Heather Langenkamp, referenced that she's been currently awake for 7 days through a cocktail of coffee and Pro Plus, or whatever the American equivalent to Pro Plus is. If you're from the UK, you'll know what Pro Plus is, so. Which I think is weird. I don't know why she's wanting to keep herself awake, but I suppose she doesn't want to be haunted in her dreams.
She's got no choice. Like, if everyone else is dying, it's the only way to live, isn't it? Never sleep again, like the song says.
Yeah.
Quite a creepy song.
Yeah, fair. Yep, this film was relatively simple. We didn't do a deep plot dive. We'll just sort of round things up. It's a very simple narrative. It's quite similar to a lot of the other ones. Surprise, surprise. There is an evil killer who preys on young teenagers. In this film, they are sexually promiscuous, apparently. Okay.
What does that mean?
Oh, mate, stop asking those kind of questions. We're meant to be finishing a podcast.
I know.
It's pretty simple. Actually, this film starts with Tina Grey, who you think is going to be the main character, but it isn't actually her, it's actually Nancy Thompson. Tina Grey eventually gets killed off. The way that this works is she gets killed, she has nightmares. They've all got interconnected nightmares. They all dream. They all have the same nightmare about Freddy Krueger. And they all try and talk about it, but they all think it's all the shit. And then eventually Tina actually gets killed in her dream when her boyfriend Rod's next to her and doesn't know, and he runs away. They think it's him. And yeah, that's kind of starts the spiral of people sort of getting killed and stuff like this. Marge Thompson plays a weird part in it. She's Nancy's alcoholic mother who eventually tells her that Freddy can't be real because she partook in the events to set him on fire a number of years ago. The backstory of Freddy, yes, he was a child murderer but didn't get convicted, and the parents in the neighbourhood came to the agreement that he was a nasty man and he deserved to die. So that's how he's got the infamous burnt face. So yeah,
it's true.
This film opens in a weird way as well, though, because I think the opening title sequence is Freddy making his claws for his glove. It's quite cool. I quite like that.
I didn't think it was going to start like that.
Also, there's a bit of callback to a film, maybe like The Exorcist. We've touched on it, the film, in a previous episode, where Reagan is subject to a number of experiments because they want to know what's happening to her in that film, where in this film, Nancy's subject to these kind of sleep therapy experiments because they want to know what's going on. That kind of part of the film reveals a bit of the potential narrative, because I think when she comes out of that dream, she has his hat, and I think over time she starts to realise that she could potentially bring Freddy out of her dream, And that essentially ends, that's what the main ending of the film is she sets a load of booby traps and eventually wants to pull him out and get her dad to help her. But yeah, it all doesn't run as smoothly as that, as you might think. But she starts to realise that she's got some power in these nightmares. That's where the power struggle shifts. It's quite cool. I quite like it. There's some daft things about Freddy I'm not a big fan of. I don't know why he's got like go-go gadget arms at one point in the film, you know.
I think it's just to exaggerate the fact that since it's a dream, he can really do anything. There's quite a few different things he does. Like his face gets pulled off apart. He can just kind of teleport to any kind of place. Like he could be running one way and he's suddenly in front of you. It's almost like a cartoon. But I think that was just a kind of cool thing that he could do since it was in like a dream kind of situation. It's one. It's a cool concept. But it's also a scary. I want to know how many children got like terrified of like falling asleep after watching it. They probably shouldn't have been watching it. They're children, but yeah. There's a lot of different things about this film. I learned a little fact about it is that in the script originally, Freddy was meant to be a child molester and not just a child murderer, but they changed it. However, I'm pretty sure the remake of the film has him as a molester, but I'm not too sure. But yeah, that's a bit of an even dodgier thing. I can see why they changed that out, because that's pretty dark. But
yeah, yeah, also we brought up the Exorcist part. Wes Craven was obviously pulling in a lot of these resources. Kenzie pointed out when we were watching the film, there's a part where Nancy's watching TV to try and stay awake. It's a nice call to The Evil Dead, the Sam Raimi film. And eventually Sam Raimi actually returned the favour by hiding Freddy's knife club and a scene in a tool shed in Evil Dead 2. There's like a nod to each other. There were obviously people who respected each other in this sphere of filmmaking. We already pointed out the whole Shining thing, the Exorcist thing. There's a lot of these things, and Wes Craven obviously famously went on to direct Scream, which is in itself is a meta film that references its films like this. So yeah, he was already doing it, but subtly at the time. Couple of other interesting things that I would like to say is Robert Englund, who is now super famously known for being Freddy Krueger, wasn't actually originally supposed to be Freddy Krueger. It was meant to be a British actor called David Warner, but he had to pull out due to scheduling conflicts, and now we get the infamous Freddy Krueger that everybody knows and loves. And secondly, it just blows my brain sometimes when you see how quick films get made. This film was shot in 32 days, so a month, and it was done. And it was actually the principal photography began in June 1984, wrapped in July, and the film came out in November.
Same year.
Look at the turnaround. Fucking hell. This is the thing, like, filmmaking these days seems to take an age to get films out, whereas back in the day they were fucking just churning them out, and these films are still fantastic even to this day. So yeah, it's mind-boggling to me. I think it's crazy. Go back to trying to do films like this. But yeah, anything else that we want to touch upon before we wrap the podcast?
I think we're good. I think anything else we have to mention, we can just mention it in our part when we're giving the score.
Right, cool. So yeah, if you're familiar with the podcast, we now go on to giving these films a rating out of 5 popcorn buckets. I think it might be me to go first this time. Yeah, I actually am surprised at how much I like this film. It's another one of these horror films that I do actually quite like. So yeah, I think a lot of the technical aspects to this film still hold up today. Practical effects will always win, in my opinion. Please, please, please try and do them as much as you can. All you budding filmmakers out there, because they just look so much better. And actually, over time, they tend to hold up because there's not a lot of weird old special and visual effects and CG all sort of in the mix. So yeah, props there. Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger is amazing. I think he's actually only got about 7 minutes of screen time in this, which might surprise people. He's meant to be the sort of main sort of lead. I think they were doing that to give the suspenseful, make him super scary. I think that's possibly changed in subsequent films where he got more and more involved on screen. But this, it works because it's meant to be kind of like a straight horror sort of slasher supernatural kind of film. And it works, and he is a scary figure. My only criticism of this film is I feel as though the narrative kind of falls in on itself at the end of the movie, because those of you who are familiar with it know that the film ends in a form of dream sequence, and there's no real sort of reference point as to when Nancy goes back into a dream and when she comes out and when she goes in, and it's really quite difficult to see the differentiation between them. And then obviously in that sequence right at the end of the film, we get probably one of the worst effects used in cinema history when Freddy pulls a mannequin through a tiny wee window in a door. But apart from that, it's a fantastic film and I'm glad I watched it. And yeah, I think I've found my subgenre of choice in the horror genre, which could be slasher films, because I've actually enjoyed a couple of these and obviously really liked Scream. So with that being said, I'm going to be quite favourable. I'm going to give this a 3.5 out of 5. So yeah, it's not quite as good as Halloween for me. It's still the OG in my opinion, but it's damn, damn, damn near close. And yeah, go and check it out this Halloween. It's an absolute blast if you're just looking for something that's actually relatively scary, and it's really quite short, an hour and a half. You can't say anything more, and it's got some comedic elements if you're looking for that style of film also. So it ticks a lot of boxes. So yeah, 3.5 for me.
Yeah, when we first started going through these slashers, I said pretty much that I thought that Nightmare on Elm Street would probably be the best of the bunch. And I feel like I was kind of close with that. I hadn't seen Halloween, so I couldn't fully comment on that or seen really anything about it. I now would probably say definitely that Halloween is a better film. But I did say this is definitely second to the four that we've watched. So I was kind of close. This film's really good. I like it's a really interesting concept of being attacked in your sleeps and being scared to fall asleep. It's like a really unique and scary thing to think about, because like, if it was real, there's no way to properly combat it. It's one thing that makes this kind of makes Freddy quite scary is the fact that there's no way to really beat him. And even in the film, when she thinks she's beat him, she actually hasn't. This film really ends with no way to win. Whereas the other films, there's you can kind of get away and or get them killed or whatnot, depending on what film it is. So yeah, I really like that. One thing that we didn't mention a lot that I really like in this film is the music. I think the music's great in this film. It's like weird. It sounds like really retro-y music. I don't even know how to describe it. It's like, it's bizarre, but I really like it. It gives us a really weird atmosphere to the film. Of course, the film, a lot of the music that's used in it is used when they're in dreams, and it works quite well because it's like, you know, it's not real and it makes everything all whoa. It's quite good. One thing I'll say is I don't think the filming's amazing in this film. I think it's all right. I don't think it's like comparing it to Halloween would be a joke, because Halloween is filmed far superior in like every way, but like the film is like all right. It does the job, but that's the one thing I would say. It's not as good as some of the other films we've looked at. Practical effects are great in this film, better than what Friday the 13th has. I think Friday the 13th tried to be a bit more violent in this film for the most part. But some of the effects in this, when they're doing the death scenes, especially when like the woman's, especially Johnny Depp's getting like exploded, and the first woman when she gets like pulled to the ceiling, and like you see the claws appear on her chest and stuff like that, that was done all very well. My only really downside for this film is kind of the same as Jonathan, and that's the ending of this film. I just feel like this film didn't really have an ending. It just kind of, it felt like it just came to a halt, and I feel like we should have got a bit more. And yeah, I don't think you really get that, because I don't think it follows the same characters in the sequels and stuff like that. So it just, it doesn't really give you a proper ending. It seems like it's going for it, but then shows that she's still in a dream, and then it kind of ends. Feels like they kind of ran out of time a little bit, but it kind of takes it a bit down for me, sadly. But bar that, overall, I did really enjoy this film. It's not to the same caliber as Halloween, but it's still a really fun watch. I would give this a 3.5 as well.
So there you have it, folks. It's a 3.5 across the board from us here at Cult Film Cafe. We both really enjoyed this film, and we both have said to go and check it out if you haven't already this Halloween. It'll be a fun watch and you'll have a good time. So yeah, that is it for another episode, and it's been an absolute blast as always to talk about another film with you all. And if you'd like to check out past episodes of the podcast, you can find us on all major podcast streaming platforms just by searching Cult Film Cafe. And if you'd like to go over and give us a wee follow on Instagram and Twitter, that would be great. Just, we are at Cult Film Cafe on both of those. And if you'd like to email the podcast, you can do by emailing thecultfilmpodcast@gmail.com. So yeah, it's been an absolute blast. And as always, it's been a pleasure with... Fucking hell, I've been talking for that long that I didn't know how to finish the podcast. So as always, it's been an absolute pleasure talking about another film with you all and Kenzie. So yeah, it's a goodbye from me.
It's a goodbye from moi as well.
Podcast out.